2023, we raised £100 million in equity, which was probably the worst period of my life.
I think we've got some of the best universities in the country, if not Europe. I think people up north usually have a bit more grit, so it's a great place to build a startup type of environment.
Every conversation we have with the tech founder, there's some element of AI there. I think at this stage, if you're not using it, testing it, trying it out, you're going to get left behind. It's sort of non-negotiable at this point.
Are we brave enough? No, absolutely not. We need to be braver and we need to be absolutely bolder, and we need to be also kinder to each other.
Hi, my name is Will Lewis. I'm from a company called OBI. I work with Allied London and department for a long time. And you're listening to the next episode of Foundations, recorded live here at Campfield in central Manchester, a next generation mega campus for tech and creative industries. Foundations is a celebration of bold beginnings, brave ideas, and the people who make them possible. And this episode, we will be discussing scaling tech businesses in Manchester, the opportunity that Manchester provides, and the various routes of funding growth in tech, and also its challenges. So I'd like to introduce this amazing panel. They include founders, senior representatives from international global tech businesses, those responsible for providing finance, and also those that are experts in recruiting and retaining talent. So please give everyone a warm hand of applause for taking part today. Rather than me introduce the panel, I'm going to ask each of them to say their name and a bit of background to their business. So starting with you.
Hello, my name's Ruby. I am CEO and founder of a company called Talent Loop. My background was in recruitment as an executive search headhunter. Then I was talent partner to a previous tech incubator. Essentially, we look at how companies attract and retain their talent without having to spend loads of money on recruitment fees or hire loads of senior people in. So that's me. Thanks for coming.
Hi, everyone. I'm Ellie Swire. I'm an investor at BGF. We're focused on providing minority investment into SMEs, operate nationally, but based here in Manchester, we invest solely in Northwest businesses, so really excited to be here. Operate across a wide variety of sectors, but a good chunk of our portfolio and our focus is in the technology sector.
Hey, good afternoon. My name is Daniel Burton. I'm the chief exec of a company called Wonderwall. Founded in Spinningfield, so a good start. We won't be leaving Manchester, but we're a technology business. We design, manufacture, and deploy technology to create net zero homes. So that's everything from home energy management, heat pumps, hot water, battery, solar, EV, all powered by AI.
Hi, everyone. Patrick Smith, founder and CEO of Sally, Manchester-born business, scaling at the moment. Will, thank you and your team. And also congratulations to Allied London for opening this incredible space. I think that deserves a round of applause.
Hello. So my name is Brad. I'm an investment director at Maven Capital Partners. We're a lower mid-market private equity and venture capital business. Operating across the UK, we've got 11 offices. I'm based in Manchester, and most of what we do is tech, B2B services, things like that.
Hey, everyone. Nice to see all your faces. My name is Alex Brooks-Sykes. So I look after safety culture for United Kingdom, Middle East and Africa. We're a digital operations platform. We work with over 85,000 different companies across the world, across different industries, in particular in Manchester, Transport for Greater Manchester and Muller, just to name two. And yeah, it's great to be a part of the panel today.
Thank you, guys. That's great. So let's go hard and go fast today. So lots of questions, lots of input. Patrick, we met 2 days ago, and very interesting background. So let's kick off with you. Will you give us a bit of a background to your business, where you started, and where you're up to now?
We met yesterday.
Yesterday. Is it Wednesday today? True.
I'm actually able to keep track of my days, impressively enough. Manchester-based business creating or defining what we call behavioral AI. So we are able to utilize the way you interact with your smart devices to actually capture who is behind the device. Novel technology, patent pending, which we're very proud about. The entire R&D team is based here in Manchester. I personally will be moving to San Francisco in September and be founder-led from there and building a small team over there. But we're going to continue growing in Manchester and in London. But been here for now 3 years in Manchester, but set up the business 2 years ago.
And have you been through a funding process already?
Yeah, we've been to multiple funding processes. One was our pre-seed, and now we hopefully on Friday we'll close our bridge round, and then we're going out to San Francisco to do our seed, and then next year we do our own Series A there.
So your initial funding round, who are the investors? What type of investment did you take on?
So we early days when you're setting up a business like Sally, we needed to trial and fail a lot. So we needed patient investors, and the best way to approach that is to find angel investors that typically have done an exit priorly, so they know what's in it and that things take longer time than expected always. So those were high net worth individuals, angels, friends, family members. I sold my kidney, like all of the above.
And how challenging was that to get a business off the ground? And what is the market like currently?
So I always like, I ran a business during COVID. I exited a business pre-COVID, and that business was 50 people. And sadly, they went bust during COVID. But then I ran my personal consultancy during COVID. I had the best time ever. So I don't think you should base your business about your surroundings, but you could create a market advantage by understanding the market you go into. So I always feel like that we as a company has always been adaptive to the situation. I moved up from London. I'm originally from Norway, but moved up to from London after spending 7 years for my sins down there. And then everybody says, you will not find funding up here. So I said, I will find funding up here. And we ended up having 20 plus investors. Angel investors in the North, yes.
Okay, and moving to Dan, who has, it looks like from my research, he's come a long way in 10 years. From crowdfunding £260,000, is that right?
We didn't actually do that, no.
Oh, was that a false article?
False starter.
Okay, well, you raised some capital in 2015, but you also did a very big deal, a couple of years ago now? Can you just talk us through your journey?
Yeah, 23. So, started off on my own in spinning fields in the Landmark building, just me in an office and a desk, and with a vision of building a technology business. So come a long way in 10 years, but building companies is never easy, and building hardware companies is extremely difficult. I remember setting up manufacturing facilities, it was about £750,000. And back in the day, you didn't get money from your bank. But lucky enough, I had a nice bank manager. You probably know him, Matt Maudsley. And Matt Maudsley, my bank manager, ended up getting me £750,000 from the bank to start up manufacturing a product that I designed and built. Back in 2019, we raised £2 million from a couple of guys, a couple of local Manchester guys, a company called AJ Bell. So Andy Bell and Fergus from AJ Bell. Love what we're doing. Fergus reached out to me and says, look, we want to be a part of your journey. So they come on board and we started building out our energy solution.
Are they still in it?
Yeah, they're still in it.
Are they?
Yeah. They got 15%. So they've done well out of their money that they put in. So they're happy. But then 2023, we raised £100 million in equity, which was probably the worst period of my life. I slept on the floor in my office for 2 days. And I remember when I actually signed the deal and I closed the deal. And you think, actually, at that point in time, you just raised £100 million. I went home to bed and I cried because it was probably the toughest period of my life. The ups and downs of, is it going to happen? Is it not going to happen? It was tough. But now we're pretty well funded. We're scaling the business. We're just expanding into the US. We're launching in Texas. So there's a lot going on in the business, but a lot of challenges. At the end of the day, this market over the last couple of years has been really, really tough. It's not been easy for anybody. I'll be telling a lie if I said everything was rosy and everybody was happy. It's not. It's tough. but you just got to keep your head down, you've got to keep working, and you just got to keep moving forward. That's all you can do.
What type of investment did you take on? You raised 100 million.
Yeah, 100 million in equity, which was an institutional investor, a company called Infrared Capital. The fund that invested in Wonderwall was a £1.6 billion fund. They've got about £9 billion under asset.
Excellent. Right, speaking of private equity, let's introduce Ellie. Mike, I don't know if you remember BGF. So they were born in quite an unusual fashion out of the financial crisis. Do you want to tell us a bit about the sort of the history to the private equity house?
Yeah, of course. So we were set up following the financial crisis. The four big high street banks came together, put together $2.5 billion, so probably the best funded startup, which we're proud to say. And that was very much with the purpose of supporting SMEs. So we are a minority investor. We can only take up to 49% stakes, and that has been our purpose since the get-go. The whole focus is for us to be able to support entrepreneurs, management teams, deliver their growth journey by being that minority junior partner to support that plan.
So as PE houses go, you sound like a very friendly, nice one. So you don't take controlling stakes. Your capital is patient, long-term. And it's like an evergreen fund that is recycled and recycled.
Yeah, that's right. So the $2.5 billion we started with, we've since invested in 650 companies nationally, huge track record and scale. In terms of size of business we invest in, that has probably increased over that period. So now we're investing in businesses making either $1 million EBITDA or for tech businesses, $3 million ARR. So probably focus more towards those kind of established but growing businesses, typically the first institutional investor in there. So yeah, great track record of scale and growing over that time.
And what about your track record in particular in the tech sector? Have you been busy in those businesses?
Yeah, invested in 120 tech businesses in those years since we were set up. So it's a huge focus of ours nationally. You know, Manchester team have a great presence in the tech space. I think we're sector agnostic generally, so we do invest in all sectors, but preference is definitely towards technology, tech-enabled services, healthcare and business services. So we do span a range, but technology is attractive to us given kind of quality of earnings, growth opportunities and lots of other attractive elements of that sector.
And apart from that ARR metric of 3 million, what else do you look for in an exciting tech businesses which meets your investment criteria?
Yeah, so size is one thing, ARR metrics, you know, around NRR and churn and all that good stuff. But the main thing for us as minority investors is that management team. So obviously we're backing entrepreneur management teams to deliver their plan. We're not making the day-to-day decisions. That's very much left up to the team. So experience and strength of the team is really important. That doesn't need to be fully fledged. We often invest in businesses where there's a lot of potential and there's recognized gaps often in the finance function or the sales team. So we completely recognize that, but that, you know, strength of management team is really important. Track record of growth and seeing those sales come through. And also in terms of end market as to, you know, is it a growing market? Who are our customers and the growth opportunity within that market?
Great. Thanks, Ellie. And Brad, you deal in a similar field, but on the venture cap side. Can you tell us more about the sort of check size and businesses that you've invested into?
So on the venture capital side, we're looking at businesses that have got £1 million of revenue. They're growing quickly. Similar themes, really. As a minority investor, we spend a lot of time on people. We want to see that they've got good experience in the sector they're operating in. Ideally, the second-time founders, but that's not always possible. So a good team. We're quite hands-on, I would say, in what we do. We always take a board seat, help to appoint a chair, really try and drive strategy, appoint people to the board that can help out, use our network, things like that. So we are fairly hands-on.
How are you finding the market at the moment? Are there many opportunities out there for funds like yourself?
It's a tricky market still. I think everyone would probably say that. we operate at that scale-up stage. I think most of the businesses that I've raised recently are that sort of pre-seed, seed. We're the bit-neck after that, before someone like a BGF would come in. So we're really on that scale-up, 1 million ARR upwards. So there are businesses that do that, but that million quid revenue is really an inflection point. You've usually got a good product at that point, so really it's about how you're going to win some more customers. And I think that's probably the hardest thing. The business owners here will probably attest to that as well.
And Alex, Safety Culture's story since being founded 21 years ago. Again, there's different figures online, but circa 1,000 employees, market cap of $1.5 billion Australian dollars, just closed another investment of $165 million Australian dollars, said to accelerate the adoption of AI in the business. But you have no offices across the UK apart from Manchester.
Correct.
Started 8 years ago.
Yep.
Why Manchester?
I love this question. Any of the events that I attend, my usual response is why not? You know, a lot of the focus, especially in the tech space, when you think about the UK, is centered around London. But Manchester, when we set up here, there's a couple of different reasons. One of the most basic reasons is the customer base that we work with are up and down the UK. They're not all based down south. We work with people all the way on, you know, the Upper Hebrides down to Cornwall and in between. So that was a big part. The other thing is like the talent that we have here. There's some incredible universities, incredible people coming out of those universities. So we've been able to hire really strongly. Being completely candid, cost is one of the reasons, you know, setting up shop here. We've got an amazing new office that the OBI team helped us find. And, you know, at the moment we've got 65 people there looking at growing that over time. And Manchester remaining the headquarters in the UK. So there's a whole kind of plethora of reasons. And yeah, long may it continue being in Manchester and scaling and growing.
Excellent. And just on that recruitment point, I want to bring Ruby in to say, why is Manchester such a good city to build teams fairly quickly?
I think we've got some of the best universities in the country, if not Europe, with phenomenal talent. I think people up north usually have a bit more grit. So it's a great place to build a startup type of environment. And also, in the pandemic, we had so many companies flock here because they thought it was kind of cheaper staff, cheaper office spaces. So we've also had an influx of tech and digital talent come to the city in the last few years as well from Europe.
Excellent. And the rest of the panel, so, well, particularly Dan, how many members of staff have you got now? Have you grown since this investment's come in?
Yeah, we're about 42. But my main focus at the moment is how do I build a company with as minimal staff as possible? So all the work that we're doing at the moment is all about generative AI. So Amazon was kind enough to give us $1 million to build out some AI, which is focused on how do we build a tech support team, which is completely digital.
Just on that AI point, I just want to bring in Brad and Ellie. When you're looking at an investment opportunity, is the future of how AI is going to be pushed into operations an important factor that you look at now?
Yeah.
Yeah. And just how it's used, the sustainability of it. Are we leveraging it? How much do we rely on it? And yeah, it varies so much by company, doesn't it? And I suppose you want to be more proactive than reactive, I think, in the use of AI.
I would say it's every conversation we have with the tech founder there's some element of AI there.
So the investment decks have definitely got the AI piece in.
Yeah, it's not just that. It's more, I think at this stage, if you're not using it, testing it, trying it out, you're going to get left behind. It's sort of non-negotiable at this point. The best ones are people that use AI to generate their own proprietary IP. They're the types of businesses we're looking for, not just using it to data scrape. So it's what you're doing with it in that next stage.
And Alex, go on.
No, sorry, I just wanted to add on that just from a safety culture lens in terms of AI within our platform. I guess we're on the other side, a little bit downstream from what you're doing. I think the biggest thing, and everyone's got different schools of thought, the way that we're kind of thinking about it is as like a force multiplier for the workforce. I think being lean is obviously really important, and we, you know, think about that internally. But how do you have AI within your platform, within your offering, and then obviously as you're playing that back to VC, where it's not just a gimmick, it's actually having a material impact, because AI is everywhere now, right? You've got it in your phones. I've got it in my washing machine at home. Realistically, what value is it adding? So I think really like trying to anchor around that, how is it actually having an impact? And trying to cut through the noise is one of the things we're really trying to do with how we're putting it in the platform. So it's going to be growing in usage across every business, you know, globally. But I just think it's how you do that in a meaningful way and not just to have, oh, we've got AI within our
offer. Yeah. Everyone's talking about AI, and I suppose that the big thing is how people are actually going to use it and make the business better and more efficient. But let's stick to that recruitment question, and while you've got the microphone, how have you recruited? And you said something interesting about a tech business doesn't have to just recruit tech people. Tell us more about that.
Yeah. It's a subject we were just talking about as well, right, before we jumped on. It's something I'm quite passionate about. I think if you say to someone, you know, what kind of career do you want to get into? And they say tech, quite often people will typically go towards developers, back-end folk, not the front-end client-facing side of the role. So safety culture, we don't have, well, bar one or two people, the rest of the team are all client-facing and they work within tech. So it's people that work in sales, customer success, support, marketing, enablement. There's a whole team built around that. And I think quite often, at least what I found is when you attend these tech events, they can be anchored around, you know, you need to know coding, you need to know development. That's a really important part. But as it relates to recruitment and getting great talent, what I've seen in Manchester is there's a lot of people within those front-end client-facing teams that Manchester is a really great place to source that talent as well.
Brilliant. And Patrick, you started in London, but then decided to form the business in Manchester and recruit. What's been the recruitment journey for you? How hard has it been? Has it been easy? Have you had access to talent?
To answer the latter parts first, like it there's an incredible talent up north. Let's make that clear, and especially in AI and engineering. We moved up and set up the business 2 years ago, and the goal for us was to attract as much talent as we could and identify. But also, we have been pivoting throughout this journey on what we started with. So the team is very different today than it was, let us say, 6 months ago even. And lately we have hired a lot of AI engineers. We hired a headhunter in London to identify the people. And we started trying to headhunt people from like Mistral and some of the competitors in this landscape. And of course they ask for silly money and they're based typically in London. And then we challenged our headhunter and said, try for like 1 week, identify 10 candidates and let's just look at their CVs and have some conversations, because I never look at CVs. I look at the individual if they're able to deliver what we set out to do. And in that week, we managed to not identify 10 people, but I think 30 great candidates. And the problem we had was that when he started coming in for second or third interviews and doing the skill testing, we ended up needing to hire more than what we were planning for because the talent was in front of us. So we made a board decision and says like, okay, these talent are so good, so we can't let them go to our competitors. So we hired a bit extra, but that was on our roadmap anyway, but we found them and they're all based here in the Northwest. So we have two candidates that is coming over three times a week from Liverpool. But beside of that, everyone is around Manchester.
That's great to hear. And Ruby, what are the tricks of the trade for founders or managers of businesses to try to grow a workforce? How do they attract and retain key talent?
It's changed a lot. So it used to be that you could attract great people just from the brand name, whereas now people are looking at what's actually going on underneath the hood of the bonnet. So how does your value proposition of being an employee actually link up with what you're putting out externally? So I think asking your team, how was their induction onboarding? How was, you know, their recruitment process, et cetera? I think everything starts within and it starts with the retention piece. I think to attract good people, it depends what level, but I think junior people, there's a lot of companies saying that they don't see the pipeline of talent coming in, but they're not doing anything to go and find them. So I think connecting with local colleges, universities, building kind of project plans together is one great way to attract people. And I think another is just word of mouth. If you've got happy people, they will recommend you to everybody they know.
Brilliant. Now, here's the question. We're going to talk about help, to the business post-investment. So, Dan, since you took on your big investment partner, what assistance have you had in day-to-day running your business?
Well, we have a chairman, but fundamentally we had to grow up. We had to put our big boys' pants on. I had to grow up. We had to. There wasn't just me making decisions. It was about actually making sure that we had all the processes in place, everything that you'd expect a business, everything from making sure you have dual payment authorization, from processes, everything that you hadn't done in the past. You had to grow up. You had to do a board pack every month. You had to do all the kind of things that you'd expect a board and institutional investors to see pretty quickly. Yeah, we had 90 days. So we had a list of probably 100 things on a list to do in 90 days to become compliant with all of the... We have to measure how much water we use. Right? They're the kind of things that we have to report into our investors. So it's not easy. They make your life hard work, but...
You're institutional now.
We are grown up and we can deal with institutional investors.
And Ellie, when you make an investment into a business, how do BGF support that business and help them develop and grow?
Yeah, so a big thing for us is minority investors, because we're not controlling, we can't, you know, step in the day-to-day decisions. A key thing for us is having that support that we can offer if the company wants it. If they don't, you know, we want them to lean and take as much as they want, but we won't force it upon them. A key thing for us to kind of bridge that gap is the chair. Like Dan mentioned, that's a really important part of our investment, bringing an experienced chair on board. That whole decision-making process should be collaborative with us and the management team to make sure it fits the needs, whether that's sector or experience or, you know, dealing with people or exit experience, whatever that may be, the chair role is really important for us. And then beyond that, we have a wider value creation team that has in-house, you know, digital support, tech support, ESG, in-house recruitment team, a whole host of things that are available should the company want that support.
Out of interest, who gets to pick the chair? Is it the investor or is it the founder?
It's a joint decision. So we basically will... I think because of our scale nationally and just the number of investments that we've made, our team have a black book of thousands of contacts. So they effectively pull together a short list of, I don't know, say six potential non-exec chairs. And that will have been fed into by management, who tell them what they're looking for, what their requirements and things they want out of their chair. We'll prepare the shortlist. And then it's up to management to select their preferred candidates to then meet. And then it's very much about chemistry. Like, management need to be able to get on with them. They need to be able, the chair needs to be able to influence management. So that collaboration is really important to make sure it's effective.
Thank you. And Patrick, do your investors have any input day to day, or do you have to update them every month or quarterly?
No, so we did this intentionally. We did a due diligence process on our investors. So we identify the people that actually can help us grow and scale the business, Hive Gus, which is actually, by the way, a great mentor to the business. Number one, we established a well-experienced chairman, David Webb, founder of 6.6, that exited to Accenture. He joined us, our chairman, and then we got our investors. Some of them don't want to be actively involved. They just wanted to get their monthly updates and so on. But we have a large cap table that are able to help us when needed, but also having that black book so they can open doors. And especially going to like San Francisco that I go in now, to have somebody that has been there and done it before is so important to have. So you have the door openers. But also, I'm a solo founder. And I can't go home to my wife every single day and complain about everything. So I agreed very early to my chairman that I needed to treat him as a co-founder, and I needed to share everything with him. So he has to have multiple hats. One is to be the chairman, one is to be in the investor, one is to be the friend, and the other one is to be my partner in crime for what we're trying to achieve. And that is so important, to have somebody you can trust and you can share everything with, but somebody that is experienced, but that thinks the best for the business and the shareholders.
So it's interesting that the common theme is that the investor as a key role to play. So it's important to...
Early days, very much so, depending on how fast of your growth is. So like I know like BGF has an impressive track record on helping and supporting. So I know a lot of founders that has backing from them.
Yeah.
And they have an incredible track record of helping and supporting, not just money, but I know that Pretura is using that previously more than money, but you guys are actually helping and adding value to the businesses along the journey. So presenting them with potential chairmen or partners so they can grow, but also internally introducing them to other potential customers, which is super important. So they're opening that network and the opportunity for the business to actually scale so the founders can focus on growing the business and delivering return of investments for a company like BGF.
Excellent.
I didn't pay him to say all that, but...
Well, we better ask Brad now.
What about us?
Yeah, how do you add value? Is it all been said, or is it other things you...
Yeah, to be honest, yeah. I mean, as a big regional investor, at any point in time, there's probably 100 companies in the portfolio, so there's a lot of sharing of best practice. You think about that scale-up stage, there's usually one or two co-founders, like CEO, CTO. So where we add most value is helping shape that management team going forward, helping introduce the right people, building out strategy, appointing the right chair. Again, like the guy said, cultural fit. We like to see someone that's been there and done it. So if your plan is to go and scale in the US, someone that's had that experience is always really helpful for us. Someone that we trust and know that's operated in that space before. So it's a similar theme. I think doing diligence on your investors is a really good point. You shouldn't just take money for the sake of taking money. You need to know who you're getting in bed with and what you're going to do with it.
And when, just on this investment process piece, are businesses, are the doors open to financial institutes like private equity houses? Do they need to go through a corporate finance broker, or can they knock on your door direct? We've got a great idea, we want half an hour of your time.
Can they
do that?
Yeah, I think it depends on the size. It's, if you're an advisor, you've got a P&L to run, so it needs to be worth it for them. If you're an earlier stage, then you should go and talk to VCs, private equity all the time. The worst case scenario is you get a bit of hard feedback and you go and do something about it. But the doors are always open. I think if you are going to go knock on the door, then be prepared with some data and things to follow up with. There's nothing worse than having a conversation with someone and say, I'll send you some info, and 2 weeks later you receive it. I've probably already moved on by then.
And Dan, how did you find your partner? Did you pay someone a lot of money?
No, they come to us actually. So they knocked on our door, which they were tracking us for a long period of time, and we didn't run a process. We did debate it, but it just felt right. We're aligned in the vision. We're aligned in what they could add to the business, and we needed them. From their knowledge in the energy industry to help us shape the strategy for the business plan going forward. So yeah, it was a good fit. Whether it's a good fit now is debatable, but
you're not spent up, are you?
No.
Good.
No.
Right. Well, this is a question for everyone. Is Manchester brave enough from a tech community in terms of building businesses in Manchester? Do we sell too early? Do we try to raise money too early? Do we raise capital for the right reasons? I'd be interested in all the panel's views, starting with you, Ruby.
We'll always be brave because we're Northern, and we've got that little worker bee spirit. I think the pandemic changed everything and a lot of companies got pretty giddy and went and raised loads of investment when actually they didn't necessarily need it. Then they spent it on growing massive teams and now they're kind of like, oh, I've got loads of people here and I'm trying to do square peg round hole for roles that I don't need anymore. So I think in that sense, I definitely think we're brave enough. I just don't think we have the same level of access to funding as we do in the South, and there still is a bit of a fight on that.
Okay. And your view, Ellie, are we brave enough?
I think we are. I mean, my experience from being at BGF is there's so many brilliant companies in Manchester and the Northwest, and tech companies within that. And there is so much opportunity here and support. You know, the universities are fantastic. The people are fantastic. There's lots of investors. I think it's a great place to do business.
I think Manchester's probably had quite a few failures over the years. Over the last couple of years, there's some big names out there that have raised a lot of money that have actually failed. But we need some success stories. We need some companies that really stand out. We need to lead from the front, and we just need to get some real good companies based in Manchester that are here for a long period, not just a short period. And
yeah, I support that definitely. And the answer to your question, are we brave enough? No, absolutely not. We need to be braver and we need to be absolutely bolder. And we need to be also kinder to each other. We need to help each other to grow. Going out to San Francisco, I'm going to take back a lot of the culture back here where funders and founders, they help each other. They understand this is part of the full circle of achieving success. We need to actually have the funds to enable the founders to do what they do, and they will deliver the return on the investment. That is forgotten. To send a pitch through a website, fill out the bloody 80 pages long form to have a meeting with an investor will not work long term. We need to start working together. So to BGS for Maven on the panel, start talking with the founders, understand their needs, and let's start taking some bloody risks.
Why are you going to San Francisco?
Because there's no risk capital in the UK. The ambition is much bigger. We're too small, sadly, here. There's the people don't want to support the ambition we are on.
I actually agree with Patrick in all of that. I think it's not about being bold. People are bold enough to start businesses, and there's a lot of infrastructure getting it off the ground. But people ask, why is there no big unicorns coming out of the Northwest? Well, you can't build a unicorn if you sell early. To your point.
You think people exit too early?
Way too early. But it depends. It depends, right? It depends on individual risk appetite from shareholders. It's a bloody hard slog growing a business, right? And at the end of the day, you might just want
to
sell.
And then again, we're selling to the US. Why can't we sell it here?
Most of our exits recently have been to US private equity. Yeah. Which is fine because they continue to grow over here and they're headquartered over here. But there is some perception around not having enough capital up here. But, you know, Manchester's the second biggest private equity and venture capital area outside of London. So where else would you go?
Alex?
Still your microphone. Just speaking from my experience, I think having gone to a lot of similar events to this and meeting early stage founders, I think there's a huge educational piece. And I think it's, you know, people like yourselves who've been there, seen the movie, have experience trying to impart that on people. You know, you're saying that people sell too quickly. Like, why is that? Is it because they're not well educated? They don't understand. And again, that's just from conversations that I've had with people. So I think there's a real educational element here. And if we believe that there is opportunities and people should hold tight, then I think it's on people that have been there, experienced that, to try and pass that on to kind of the future generations. Just my two cents.
Okay, great. Right, so I'm going to finish up here. You've all got one word. We're going to finish with a positive word. So we might not be brave enough as a city, but what's the best thing about growing and running a business and starting a business in this city?
The community.
Two words.
You pinched my word. Although I was just going to say community. Yeah, I echo it, community.
You can't use the same word.
People? Network. Okay, we'll go network.
Staff.
Team.
Infrastructure.
I'm going to hyphenate this. Hard work.
Excellent. Right, well, thank you so much to what has been a fantastic panel. Early Dan, Patrick, Brad, Alex and Ruby. And thanks to everyone for listening to Foundations, a celebration of bold beginnings, brave ideas and the people who make them possible. If you like what you've heard, please remember to subscribe to Foundations on whatever your podcast at Campfield Manchester on both Instagram and LinkedIn for more. I think that's enough. Right, thanks everyone. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Foundations, a celebration of bold beginnings, brave ideas, and the people who make them possible. Remember to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts for the latest episodes and follow @CampfieldMCR on Instagram.